Psalm 101. Quite a political psalm and quite relevant to today as always. The king promises God to govern with justice. So the eye of this psalm is the king. Well, it often is. Psalm 99, which we did last time, acknowledges Yahweh as a God of justice. And I'll quote from verse 4, "Mighty King, lover of justice, you have established equity. You have executed justice and righteousness in Jacob." Jacob meaning the 12 tribes, the whole of Israel. Psalm 100, which we just did, celebrates the fact that God's justice is eternal. And we just quoted this, "Yahweh is good. His steadfast love endures forever, his faithfulness to all generations." So here in Psalm 101, the psalmist declares that this exercise of justice is realized through the governing of the king. That's how God's justice is exercised. Of course, God's actions are mediated in our world. That's obvious. So it's particularly through the king, the anointed one, that God's will is being done and God's reign is being achieved and so on. And I compare the following from the book of Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 18, which says, "When he has taken the throne of his kingdom, he shall have a copy of the law." By the way, as a curious point, copy of the law in Greek is deuteronomion, Deuteronomy. It's the only time the word Deuteronomy occurs in the whole of the Bible, the Greek Bible. And it occurs right here. That's why it's called Deuteronomy. It's a copy. Well, it means it's a new look at the law, a spiritual look at the law, which is already in the oral tradition. This may actually quite be older than the book of Exodus, by the way. So we're not talking about temporal thing here, but the law was well known, and this through the oral tradition, and maybe little bits of writing, but the book of Exodus, as we have it, was formed after, probably, the book of Deuteronomy. Can you follow what I'm trying to say there? So the book of Deuteronomy is another look, a spiritual look at the law in the light of the developments of history and so on. Just as the Vatican II Council might be a new look at what Catholicism is in the light of the modern world and so on. There it is, copy of the law, Deuteronomy. "He shall have a copy of the law written for him in the presence of the Levitical priests. It shall remain with him, and he shall read in it all the days of his life." Interesting use of words, to read in it. You might just not read it, but read in it. "All the days of his life, so that he may learn to revere, or fear, sense of awe before Yahweh his God, diligently observing all the words of this law and these statutes." When the king becomes king, the prince becomes king, on that day when God adopts him as his son, which is another psalm we'll do a couple of weeks' time, "You are my son, this day have I begotten you," on that day of his consecration, anointing as king, he is to have a copy of the Torah, and he's to read it every night and keep it by his bed and govern according to God's will. So the focus, as we'll see in a moment, in Psalm 101, is on the king avoiding ministers who are arrogant, ambitious, and greedy. Now this is a pretty special psalm. The king is saying, I'm not going to have people in my ministries who are like this. I've got to not only follow the Torah, but ensure that the people responsible for various governing administrators of justice and all the rest of it, in my ministry, using a modern term, but the word is used here too, service, they will also be people who follow the law, and I'll make sure it's done. The buck stops with the king. I'll read you a few texts before I get on to the psalm. So it would be good if the Pope had a copy of this, for example. It'd be good if the bishop had a copy. It'd be good if the prime minister had a copy. It'd be good if the premier had it. You know, so anyone in government is responsible for those people who are administering government in his name or in the name of the people. So this psalm is terribly relevant to that. I'll just read a few quotes first. Isaiah 32, a king will reign in righteousness and princes will rule with justice. It's no good having the king doing a good job while his boys are running riot with the other ministries. A wise king, Proverbs, winnows the wicked. He throws it up in the air and the wind blows away all the stuff and only the real wheat lands. Proverbs again, take away the wicked from the presence of the king and his throne will be established in righteousness. Whereas if he has evil advisers or people who lie or whatever else under his authority, the kingdom will decay. Proverbs again, if a ruler listens to falsehood, all his officials will be wicked. And finally, Sirach, as a judge is, so are his officials. As a ruler of a city is, so are all its inhabitants. In the biblical record, most of the kings of Judah were judged to be failures. Now, this is, were they, weren't they? I don't know. Well, from the point of view of the writer, of the Deuteronomic writers, by the way, but also Sirach, they look back at their kings, and the only three that survive are these three. This is the book of Sirach. Except for David, Hezekiah, and Josiah, all of them were great sinners, for they abandoned the Torah of the Most High. The kings of Judah came to an end. The writer Sirach, the wise teacher, 200 BC, looking back over the history and drawing on the statements that you find in the book of Kings and the book of Samuel and so on, where they had to find a reason for failure. This is the logic. It's not good logic, but this is their logic. Granted, Jerusalem fell. It fell because God willed it to fall. That's their thought. I think it's wrong, but that's what they thought. And if God willed it to fall, in other words, God decides which army wins. Yeah. But that's how they thought. If it fell, since God is just, they must have done something wrong. Get the logic? So what did they do wrong? So they had to blame the kings. And where there was success, they congratulated the king. Where there was failure, they blamed the king. It's too simplistic. It doesn't work logically or theologically, but that's the mentality of the authors. So the only three kings that came out with any kind of honour in the annals of the history were David, Hezekiah, and Josiah. Let's start our psalm, Psalm 101. Verse 1, I want to sing of kindness, chesed, and right judgment, mishpat. It's no good having a judgment made in a court, it's talking about an actual practical decision being made by a magistrate or a king in regard to particular matters. So that's what he wants to sing about, chesed, faithful love, and right judgment. That's the topic of our psalm. Micah asks, what does Yahweh require of you but that you make right judgments? Love kindness, he said. Choose, love means choose, rather than not choose, kindness, and walk humbly with your God. Pretty famous statement of Micah, often spelt out more simply than I have there, but I'm being very literal with the meanings of the words. That's what Micah says God wants of us, to make judgments that are right, to choose kindness rather than the opposite, and to walk humbly with your God. Wisdom, verse 12, although you are a sovereign in strength, You judge with fairness, and with great forbearance you govern us. For you, God, have power to act whenever you choose. Through such works you have taught your people that the righteous must be kind. The Greek word epikeia, there is an English word in technical terms, epikeia, you might have heard, I don't know, in the moral theology, it's a flattening out of this actual word here, epikeia, is basically a quality expected of one who pronounces judgment. It's translated fairness in the above texts that we've read. That's the Greek for it. In the following texts from the New Testament, this word, epikeia, is translated gentle. I'll explain why I'm talking about this, because it's a very important quality of anyone in a decision-making capacity. And by the way, when governments take this away from people in administering justice, we're in a dreadful state. When they have, what's that thing they're calling it? The judgment is made, I can't think of the English word we use. In other words, if a three-year sentence, for this you must give three sentences. There's no mandatory sentences. Mandatory sentences are an appalling abuse of human freedom, and they're a dreadful thing to do, because they cannot, the magistrate, the person giving the decision, can no longer take into consideration all the factors that are involved and use the key quality of a judge, which is epikeia, the capacity to be able to look at what is really happening and to adapt the judgment to it. If a government takes that away from people administering justice, we're in a dreadful state, and they are tending to want to do that for the sake of keeping terrorism at bay and all the rest of it. So, this is a basic quality, and here it is here in Philippians 4:5, this quality, epikeia, you might like to take a technical term for it. Let your gentleness be known to everyone, for the Lord is near. Gentleness doesn't quite get it, I don't think, but when you're making judgments of people, make them humbly, taking in all the facts, aware of the capacity of people have, aware of the background of the person who's done this act, aware of the other factors that came into it. Be like this. Don't just make harsh judgments from your position of power or fear or whatever it might be. Be gentle. Gentle meaning in your judgments. And show courtesy to everyone. That's Titus, Paul giving advice to Titus as he starts the church off pretty well in Crete. It's just a beginning church, a Jewish Christian community, quite primitive starting. So he says, you know, be very gentle with people, use epikeia, we might say. James 3:17, the wisdom from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy, good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. Epikeia, or epikeia, the Greek, is a wise application of the law by a judge who takes all circumstances into consideration and exercises justice with compassion and loving kindness. And please, God will always treasure that in what we're flippantly calling a democracy. If it's going to be real democracy, let us do this. And nothing, if we lose this, we're losing what our forebears worked centuries to produce and give us as a heritage for us, and we could drop it. He dropped the baton quite quickly out of fear, which some of our governments are actually working on reducing us to, and we must resist it. Proverbs, finally, before I go back to the psalm, loving kindness and faithfulness preserve the king. His throne is upheld by loving kindness. Okay, the psalm. We've done the first part of verse 1. I want to sing of kindness and right judgment. says the psalmist as he plucks on his musical instrument. And he goes on, "To you, Yahweh, I will make music. I want to explain the way that is blameless. When shall I attain it? I want to walk with integrity of heart within my house." Could this psalm be one of David's psalms? David obviously had a reputation as a psalmist. In fact, a lot of the psalms are put under David's name, as a lot of the wisdom literature is put under Solomon's name, and a lot of the law literature is put under Moses. So you've got the same movement here. I just wonder whether David could well have written this. Don't know. Why not? In any case, it's in the lips of a king saying it. And now we get to the point of it, and I'll read it without much comment. "I will not set before my eyes anything that is dishonorable. I hate what criminals do." Hate, don't take love and hate in the Bible as feelings. Usually in our language, that's what I mean. If you hate something, you feel badly about it. Blow the feelings. They might be there or they mightn't be there, but they're irrelevant, absolutely irrelevant. Hatred means I choose not to follow. Love means I choose to follow. It's a question of will and choice, always. Love your neighbour as yourself. It's got little to do. You might be feeling dreadful, but if you choose to do good to your neighbour, you are loving your neighbour. So, I hate what criminals do. In other words, when I make my decisions, I do not follow what they're doing or take their advice or choose to go along that track. They will not attach themselves to me. I won't have them as minister for refugees or finance or anything else. Perverseness of heart shall be far from me, says the king. I want nothing to do with evil. One who secretly slanders a neighbour, I will silence. They come up to me in the cabinet and whisper this stuff, gone. A haughty look and an arrogant heart I will not tolerate, says the king. I will look with favour on the faithful in the land, so that they may live with me. Whoever walks in the way that is upright shall be in my service, ministering for me in the kingdom. So the king is declaring that he won't have such people around him. Proverbs. It's an abomination to kings to do evil, for the throne is established by righteousness. And Jesus ben Sirach, Jesus the son of Sirach, Sirach meaning the wise teacher of the early 2nd century BC, has the following advice for those seeking counsel. All counsellors praise the counsel they give, but some give counsel in their own interest. Be wary of a counsellor and learn first what is his interest, for he will take thought for himself. He may cast the lot against you and tell you your way is good. But when he has a secret ballot, he votes against you. And then stand aside to see what happens to you. Do not consult the one who regards you with suspicion. Hide your intentions from those who are jealous of you. Sounds like Machiavelli a bit. Back to our psalm, verse 7. No one who praises fraud shall remain in my house. No one who utters lies shall continue in my presence. Morning by morning I will put down the wicked in the land, excluding all evildoers from the city of Yahweh. Morning by morning, reason for that. Morning is the time that justice was exercised in the public square near the gate. So they didn't put off things. If you were accused of committing adultery or robbery or murdering, taking someone else's sheep, Then the next morning everybody gathered at the gate and it was decided yay or nay, and you were executed or what. It was all over. You knew where you were pretty quickly, because that morning the judgment would be made, for good or ill. Jeremiah 21, O house of David, thus says Yahweh, execute justice in the morning, and deliver from the hand of the oppressor anyone who's been robbed, or else my wrath will go forth like a fire and burn with no one to quench it because of your evil doings. And Job 38, have you commanded the morning since your days began? You, Job, who think you're so smart, have you commanded the morning? And caused the dawn to know its place, so that it may take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It's a pretty good image, isn't it? Have you done that? He says.